following program is distributed by the Bears Barroom Radio Network. It's presented live over MixLR.com and later disseminated in podcast format on most delivery platforms. It's intended for all audiences. Never before in the history of sports podcast has one show made this promise. Draft on Tap will report on every college prospect pro scouts are looking at for the 2020 NFL Draft. Every one of them.
Sanders, smother, Chase Young, another big play.
Montez, second and goal, steps in, caught, touchdown. The third passing touchdown of the first half for Steven Montez. One, there's Johnson. He's got it. Touchdown, Texas. An open man at the 25. A foot race for the tight end. There's that man again. Albert O with his second score, 47 yards.
Draft on Tap with Bears Barroom draft analyst Denny Shimon. Your host, Ryan Badgley. And featuring some of the most respected draft analysts in the country. Grab a beer. We're about to make history.
That's right. We're about to make history. Welcome to Draft on Tap. I'm your host, Ryan Badgley. And with me each and every week, Bears Barroom draft analyst Danny Shimon. Danny, how are you tonight, brother?
Hey, Ryan, man. How you doing? I'm doing great, man. Feeling excited to kick off our show. I've been waiting for, how many months now to get this going? It's never too early to talk draft. It feels like it was just like yesterday. We were discussing the 2019 draft class, and we're down in Mobile and checking them out. And reviewing the Bears draft after that was concluded with. And now we're on to the 2020 class.
Yeah, and I have to admit, Danny, I'm super excited to be a part of this with you, brother, and super excited to welcome our first guest to Draft on Tap, none other than senior NFL draft analyst for the Draft Network and co-founder of ClimbingThePocket.com, a former quarterback and coach at North Carolina Central University, Jordan Reed. Jordan Reed, welcome to the show. Happy to have you on, man.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a pleasure, you know, being you guys' very first guest. I'm excited what we're going to discuss today.
So I want to kick things right off the top here with you, Jordan, with some of the events that have happened in the college game, you know, over the last 24 to 48 hours. And with that is the injury to the linebacker from Alabama, Dylan Moses. And, you know, now, I've seen some reports that it's a torn ACL, and some reports saying that he's likely out for the season. Nothing really actually confirmed. You know, obviously a big loss for Alabama, as Nick Saban has said that they were very thin at the linebacker position. Just want to get your thoughts on Dylan Moses and how not only does it affect him, but how it affects Alabama going forward.
Well, it's a huge loss, and I say that because he actually was transitioning to play middle linebacker this year after playing the wheel linebacker spot last year. So he was expected to be the middle piece of Nick Saban's defense this year, and we all know how strong Alabama is on defense every year. And then that was essentially the one guy that they could not lose. And everyone says that Alabama is an NFL factory. They have a five-star right behind another guy, especially their running backs. But it's just not the case like that with their linebackers this year. They were very thin in the middle of their defense, and Moses was the one guy that they could not lose on defense. It's just a really unfortunate situation for him. Now, for him, he has a really tough decision to make, and I say that because he could go back, but there is the risk of re-injuring the ACL and really messing his stock up even more. Or he could come out this year, and I think he still would be a first-round pick. And it's a similar situation to what Miles Jack was in a couple of years ago, where he tore his ACL after a couple of games in at UCLA. He ended up going in the second round. But I think with how thin the linebacker group is in this year's draft, I still think that's going to push Moses up the board a bit. And he still probably will be a top 20 selection, in my opinion, even though he did tear an ACL. And we've all seen, guys, that a torn ACL really isn't a major injury like it was, say, 10 years ago. Yeah. So, and he has plenty of time to recover as well. So I think if he does declare, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, we were talking a little earlier today in regards to this, kind of similar to the Eddie Jackson injury when he came out and he fell to the fourth round. We were kind of hoping, oh, maybe he'll drop a little and Bears will have a chance to grab him. And I'll kick it over to Danny with one more piece of breaking news that came out over the last few hours. Danny, if you want to take that away.
Yeah, the suspensions for the players badge. I have my laptop here, but it's not loading up right here. The four players are suspended from Alabama today.
Yeah, yeah. So it's you got Najee Harris, Brian Robinson, Terrell Lewis, and Devonta Smith, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, two of those guys are starters, I believe. Devonta Smith and Najee Harris is actually going to start this year as well. The other two guys are more of in the reserve role. Terrell Lewis was going to take on a bigger role this year after getting hurt last year. So with Alabama, we know how good their running backs are. So I'm sure, unlike a linebacker, they have another five-star recruit right behind them, even though the number two recruit in the country, I forget his name. His name escapes me. He got hurt earlier in camp. So they're really thin at the running back position, but they still have some guys behind any of those guys ready to take over, like we've seen in years past, where Josh Jacobs really came out of nowhere last year and ended up being a first-round selection with Devonta Smith. We know how loaded Alabama is at receiver. They still have Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, and some other guys as well out there. And Jalen Waddle was another young guy that's probably going to be a top selection in the 2021 draft. So offensively, I think they'll be just fine. But losing Terrell Lewis for the first half probably is going to affect them a bit more, as opposed to losing those guys in the first half or the first quarter in Devonta Smith and some of the other guys on offense, Brian Robinson and Najee Harris.
Yeah, I was shocked.
Lewis coming off that injury as well. So he was supposed to have a bounce back here as well. So this is going to – it's only going to – for the first half. So hopefully that doesn't impact them that much. But getting onto your big board there, Jordan, you released it this past week and on Twitter, and I saw it on the Draft Network, your top 100. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple players, a lot of players that you and I agree on. There's a couple players that we have some differing opinion on. But I want to start off first with the quarterback position. There are mm-hmm. two players in particular, one that you and I both love, no pun intended, and another one that you and I kind of have some differing opinion on. So I'm going to release my top 10 quarterbacks later on in the show. So I'm going to let you go ahead and talk about Utah State's Jordan Love and what you see in him and why you see possibly a star in the making.
Yeah, a player I'm really excited about. And I was a bit late on him. There was some early summer hype with him. And I didn't really get a chance to dive into his film last year just because I really didn't know that much about him. And I wanted to get ahead on some of the guys from last year, you know, Kyler Murray, Drew Locke, Dwayne Haskins, all those guys. I was focusing most of my attention there, but he was a late summer scout evaluation for me, and I was really impressed. The one game that really made me fall in love with him was the Michigan State game. And what I love about Jordan Love is that I like to call him a relief pitcher, and that he knows exactly when to use certain pitches. And what I mean by that is he's fantastic with knowing ball speed, his ball awareness of knowing when and how to throw the ball. And oftentimes you see with young quarterbacks, they want everything to be a fastball. But with him, he just plays pitch and catch, and he makes everything look so easy. And that's exactly what you see in the Michigan State game. Now, the thing for him that's going to be huge is that he lost his top five weapons, and it's a new coaching staff as well. So Wake Forest this Friday is going to be the big test for him, and also LSU on October 5th. That's going to be another game that's going to be huge for him as well. So now that he's in a national spotlight, all eyes are on him. I really want to see how he's going to adjust and if he lives up to the hype. If he does live up to the hype, I think he's going to position himself to definitely be a first-round selection.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. And just to add on top of what you just said right now, I mean, the other thing I like about him is his quick release, the ball placement, his accuracy on his deep throws. I mean, the kid's a slender, but he's 6'4", 200-some pounds. So I definitely see him having an opportunity and a chance to sneak into that first round. And just like you, I was late on him as well. I mean, I saw him last year breaking down some Dax Raymond tape. And I'm like, holy cow, this quarterback can play. And then lo and behold, now you hear the buzz about the NFL scouts and talking about him. And next thing you know, he's a guy that's being projected now possibly for the first round. So, yeah, that's a guy that we both agree upon. So my guy, Texas quarterback Sam Ehlinger, mm-hmm. I don't see him in your top 10. Actually, I don't even see him in your big board. So mm-hmm. I think what am I missing there with Sam?
So with Sam, I haven't actually had to do a deep dive on him yet. So that was really one of the only reasons that I haven't really included him in my big board, just because I've only watched two games on him. And I like to watch at least four games on guys, especially quarterbacks. I don't want to go into a situation where I watch two of their bad games. And there was some games later in the season where they played really well. So once I'm able to watch the entire season from him last year, I'll be able to dive into his film a bit more. But he did flash when I was watching Colin Johnson. So that's not to say that he won't be a top 10 quarterback for me, but he could definitely end up in that top 10 mix once I'm able to dive into his film a little bit more.
Yeah, man, he just kept growing on me, you know, from his freshman year to last year, sophomore year, and to now his junior year. So, I mean, he's high on my board here. Mm-hmm. So I definitely would like to, you know, circle back with you and after you've dived into his tape and see, you know, what your thoughts are on him. So moving on to the defensive side of your board here. And, you know, guys here in Chicago, you know, we love defense. And your top player, as well as mine, is the edge rusher from Ohio State, Chase Young. So, man, it seems like another in line of successful defensive ends coming out of Ohio State, and Chase Young looks like to be the next one. Go ahead and give us your take on Chase Young and why you made him your top overall player.
Yeah, so what I like about Chase Young is that he already has the natural tools and tool shed to be what I like to call an elite type of pass rusher. And he's still trying to figure things out as far as some of the counter moves and how to properly use his hands. So it's really, he's kind of just working random moves out there. He doesn't really have a plan when he does go to rush the passer a lot of times, but a lot of things does work for him just because he's so explosive. Now, he's not an overly bendy type of rusher like we saw from Brian Burns or somebody like that from last year, but he wins a lot with power, but he can also win with some finesse coming off the edge as well. But to couple that as well, he's a really good run defender as well. And if you go back and watch his game against Northwestern from last year, where he had three sacks, I believe it was a season high for him in that game. You see everything that you like to see from an edge rusher. And I know this might be high praise, but he reminds me a bit of Julius Peppers coming out. It's the same size, 6'5", 265 pounds, wins with power, but he can also win with athleticism as well. And that's what makes me like Chase Young so much. And he's still starting to figure things out as far as being a pass rusher, and he's just scratching the surface of how good he can be.
That's a real good comp. Yeah, Peppers is a real good comp for him. And the one thing about Ohio State pass rushers, and Jordan, let me know if you agree, but you can tell these guys are very well coached. I mean, going back mm-hmm. to the Bosas, both Joey and Nick, even Sam Hubbard, the way these guys use their hands to swipe, rip, to disengage from the offensive lineman, to get that outside shoulder really is impressive. And you can tell these guys are well coached coming out.
Absolutely. I think they have the best defensive line coach in the country in Larry Johnson. And I'm not talking about the old Chiefs running back, but Larry Johnson, he's a very good coach, very well respected in the college industry.
A couple of the guys in the Big Ten that you have on your big board, and the guy I think really came on late last year, the kid from Penn State, Gross Matos, yeah. A defensive end. He's a big. I see more him more of a 4-3 base end, but I mean, he's a guy that's also young and developing. Him and also the kid from Iowa, Espinosa.
Yep. Yeah, both of those guys. I think I like Espinosa a bit more. He ended up being a top 10 player on my board, and the best way to describe it is that he packs a very powerful punch, and he has a really good two-hand swipe that he likes to incorporate off the edge. But what I love about him the most is that he's really scheme versatile. I think he could be a base end, a 5 technique in a 3-4, or he can be a 4 technique in a 4-3 deep, or 5 technique, I should say, in a 4-3 defense. So I really like his scheme versatility and his upside as well. Now, he's not going to test as athletically gifted as some of these other rushers like a Gross Matos or even a Chase Young in a sense. But as far as a game that's very mature and ready to step on the field right away and make an impact, I think Espinosa probably is going to have the most instant type of impact just because of how mature his game is. Now, on the flip side of that, with Gross Matos, I think he has a lot of growing up to do as far as a run defender. You really see his thin frame really come into the equation when he's trying to set the edge. He really gets washed out from time to time. And if you see pictures of him, you notice how thin-limbed he is. So he's going to have to be hit a little bit as far as a run defender. But I want to see him take the next step in that area this year.
And then one more guy I got to throw in there, man. I'm just, the more I watch this kid, the more I fall in love with him. And the kid from Syracuse, Alton Robinson.
Yeah.
I mean, the kid's motor, the kid's first quick step. I mean, go ahead and give us your scouting report on him.
Love him. I'm a big fan. Has a very interesting story as well. He started his first year out in a junior college and at NEO, Northeastern Oklahoma A&M. And he finished third in the country in sacks out there, 14 sacks, I believe it was. He recorded in his only year there. And Syracuse really found him by accident, which is a really funny story that I don't want to go deep into because we'll be here all day. I just love telling the background of prospects. That's really my favorite thing to do. But they found him in the middle of nowhere at what's called NEO Junior College, and they didn't expect him to have an instant impact like he did 2 years ago. And then last year, he just really burst onto the scene. And the funny thing about him is that he's just out there freestyling. And what I mean by freestyling is that he's so athletically gifted that he can just try stuff and it works. And he's so bendy. He's so explosive off of the edge, very mature with his hands. Now, he needs to take another step as a run defender as well, similar to Gross Matos. I think he's a bit of a step ahead as far as a run defender from Gross Matos, but I still want to see him take another step in that area. But as far as being a pass rusher, he definitely has that. And NFL teams are really going to love him just because he's a huge moldable piece of clay that can definitely be a consistent starter.
Man, and that motor, that thing never stops. He's constantly on the go.
Flaming hot. Flaming hot.
So a lot of Bears fans reach out to me and say, all right, you know, they're worried about the safety position and they're looking at towards next year's draft. You know, obviously we have Eddie Jackson entrenched there, all pro, you know, great. But HaHa Clinton Dix is on a 1 year contract and Deion Bush is becoming a free agent after this year. So they're looking at some depth possibly as a starter. So the two guys that you have on top of your list are two guys I'm in love with as well. Grant Delpit from LSU, I think if he came out last year, it could have been a top 10 pick. And then the other guy I want to talk about is a guy that I don't know what to do with him, man. I just know he's a player, Isaiah Simmons from Clemson. So let's start off with Grant Delpit, and then we'll go into Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah, I will say this. If the Bears are in position to pick Delpit, something went really wrong.
It's been a bad year. Yeah,
it's been a very bad year.
Actually, the Raiders have the Bears' first-round pick, so they couldn't even get Delpit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I forgot about that from the Khalil Mack trade. But if they're in position to get him, or if they even were without the Khalil Mack trade in position to get him, something had to go drastically wrong, just because I would be surprised if he's not a top 12 pick. And he reminds you a little bit of Jamal Adams. He's not as physically gifted as Jamal Adams as far as around the line of scrimmage and being an enforcer, but being a jack of all trades, he definitely has that. So I'm excited to see where he ends up going. And he's been awarded with the number 7 jersey this year. And if you think about how much respect guys that wear that jersey at LSU, from Patrick Peterson to Tyrann Mathieu to even Leonard Fournette, who was a really good college player at LSU, that just shows you the type of respect he has garnered from the locker room and from his coaching staff. So I'm excited to see him play. And who was the other safety that you mentioned? I forgot.
Well, that's the thing. That's a good question, because I'm not sure if he is a safety. Isaiah Simmons from Clemson. I mean, I see him as a linebacker, as a weak side, will side linebacker, and just have him run and chase the ball carrier. I could see him lining up and you know, when he played against Notre Dame in the CFP semifinals, he's lining up against a safety. I mean, the slot, you know, receiver, tight end, whatever it was, he was out there, you know, covering him. He made a terrific play down the seam against Boykins, who ran a 4.42 at the 40. So, you know, what do you see him at when you project him towards the NFL? Do you see him more as a hybrid? Do you see him more as a you know, in a box kind of safety or a linebacker?
I think I see him more as a will linebacker. And I say that because he does struggle from time to time in coverage. And I think his best asset is when he is around the box. And that's not to say he's not a bad coverage guy, just because he's not. But if you're depending him to play as a guy with one high, or that single high guy on the roof of the defense, that's really not his calling card. But if you ask him to play the hook to curl area or the boundary areas, I think that's where his greatest assets are. And then using him as a blitzer, I think that's another great asset of him, just because he's very physical. He's a terrific blitzer off of the edge. And he was a guy, he had a multiple types of sacks last year, even in the Notre Dame game. That's really where you saw him being used as an ultimate chess piece, whether that was around the line of scrimmage, in coverage, on the roof of the defense, even some in that game as well. So I think scheme fit is going to be the biggest thing for him, because he could end up being a very reliable starter, or it could be a situation of a player that I compared him to, but I think he's a much better prospect than Sua Cravens. And if you remember about Sua Cravens, you really didn't know if he was a linebacker or if he was a safety. So just determining which one he is and classifying him as a tweener, and him falling in line with a certain scheme, is going to make or break his career. But if you use him at that will linebacker spot, I think that would be best for him.
But when you watch his tape, man, you just cannot get your eyes off of him. He's all over the field. He's a mismatch wherever they place him. I just love the way they use him at Clemson. I just think hopefully it doesn't hurt his position when he comes into the NFL in terms of, you know, not having a solid, you know, position in teams saying, oh, is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? Like, I agree with you. I see him initially as a weak side linebacker, but I also could see him playing some box safety. So yeah, we'll see how he transitions this year.
Yep.
Jordan, so we want to hear from you which games this you know, opening week here should college football fans focus on, especially those fans interested in pro prospects?
Yeah, the first one definitely is going to be on Friday with Jordan Love going against Wake Forest. He's going to be on a national stage, and there isn't a prospect in the country right now with a hotter stock than him, I would say. And this is probably one of the two biggest opponents that he's going to play this year. And I know a lot of people like to really downplay Wake Forest, but they're a team that's really on the upswing. And I know they've kind of been in the basement a little bit in a sense in the ACC, but they've been a team that's been bowl eligible the past few years. And with Utah State, they don't play the best type of opponents week in and week out. They don't see some teams from the ACC weekly. So I think this is going to be one of the biggest games of the year for him. And also October 5th against LSU, there's going to be so many scouts at that game. I plan to attend that game as well. So I'm really excited about going there to seeing him throw live. Another game is going to be Utah and BYU, and that's because of the return of running back Zach Moss. And there's been a lot of excitement about him, even though he hasn't been able to stay healthy the past few years. But he's seen as one of the best senior running backs throughout the league, and the Senior Bowl is really already excited about him. So keep an eye on Zach Moss out at BYU. They play Thursday at 10:15. And then, of course, Alabama and Duke this weekend, this Saturday at 3:30, just because it's Bama. Everybody's going to want to see Bama. They're loaded with prospects, and everybody wants to see how Jerry Jeudy, Tua Tagovailoa, Alex Leatherwood, Jerry Jeudy already, Henry Ruggs III. There's just so many guys, and they're loaded this year, guys. Everybody just wants to see how they're going to get off to a good start this year.
How about Auburn and Oregon? Justin Herbert.
Yeah, that's definitely another one. I'm surprised I forgot to mention that one off the top of my head. That's probably the hottest matchup of the weekend. And with Herbert, everyone wants to see if he can remain consistent this year. He's in that QB1 battle alongside Tua. So getting off right away with an SEC opponent, all eyes are definitely going to be on Herbert this weekend.
So the last couple of drafts, you know, with guys like Trubisky, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, guys who were not top of the mainstream media, you know, top of the head, you know, top talking about them prior to the season, even prior to the draft. So if I had to ask you to predict this year, who, if there's one that they can think of right now off the top of your head, that you could be this year's, you know, top 10 pick, if you will, that comes out of nowhere and by April we're all talking about him?
Yeah, his name is Jeffrey Okuda. He's a cornerback from Ohio State.
Yep.
He really came on strong last year. Now, he doesn't have the ball production. He hasn't recorded an interception in his career to date. But if you go back and watch him against Washington last year in the Rose Bowl, I believe it was, man, he was outstanding. And I didn't know much about him going into the game, but just watching how well he played in that game, that's really what made me write his name down. And if you go back and watch the film, he was a bit inconsistent last year. Michigan State was one game where he really did struggle. But they're incorporating a bit of a new scheme this year. They're playing a little bit more press man as opposed to zone like they were last year. And he plays in the slot. He also plays outside. So he has that versatility that you're looking for, like a Jalen Ramsey, like he did at Florida State, played safety, played slot, and on the outside. Very long, about 6'1", 200 pounds. He has fantastic feet. That's the first thing that you notice about him. His technique is outstanding as well. So I'm really looking forward to seeing if he can take that next step. But Jeffrey Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State, definitely would be one guy I could see sneaking to that top 10. And we've seen with Ohio State guys, Denzel Ward, Marshawn Lattimore, we've seen them essentially turn into a factory to produce first-round defensive backs.
Man, I mean, his quickness, his speed, his burst is very similar to Denzel Ward.
Yeah. And he's much bigger than Denzel Ward, too, which makes it so much more intriguing.
That is for sure. Yeah, that's a terrific name.
Yep.
So, Jordan, we're going to switch things here and kind of turn to the NFL. And we want to kind of get your evaluation of the Bears draft class from this past season with more of a focus on David Montgomery. You know, Bears fans are ecstatic for this kid to be in our organization. And we'd love to get your thoughts on him.
Love him. I'm a huge fan of him. And out of all the picks that the Bears made, this was by far my favorite. And it was one of my favorites just because it was one of their first, or it was their first pick. And he couldn't have landed in a better situation just because he's been compared to Kareem Hunt a lot. And if you think about it, Kareem Hunt was in a very similar situation with Matt Nagy being a disciple of Andy Reid, David Montgomery being a comparison of Kareem Hunt. You're seeing a running back that's in a very, very similar situation. Now, he's not a guy that's going to peel off long runs, 20 plus yards at a time. But what you notice about him is he has fantastic short area quickness, and he's known for breaking tackles. He was by far the best tackle breaking running back in the country last year. And he's a great receiver out of the backfield. You guys have seen in the preseason, they've used him so many ways on screens, in the slot. And that's something that's going to be used with him in Matt Nagy's offense. And that's why I say, and pairing him with Tariq Cohen, you can do so many things with both of those guys in the backfield. So I'm really interested to see how Nagy does incorporate him, just because he is a jack of all trades, and he's just not a guy that is just a rusher that can run between the tackles. He can run on the perimeter and be a fantastic receiving threat as well.
Yeah, his college tape is like a highlight reel, for crying out loud. It's amazing, man. Keep sticking with the NFC North. You know, if you can speak on each team, you know, in their draft, you know, specifically, obviously, the bigger picks for the teams, TJ Hockenson in Detroit, Rashawn Gary in Green Bay, Darnell Savage as well. You know, just your thoughts on the other NFC North teams and how things went for them.
Yeah, I thought the NFC North drafted well for the most part, and everyone knew that the Lions were very interested in TJ Hockenson. And the one thing that made me a bit hesitant about it, and I thought they probably would be hesitant about it just because of the Eric Ebron experiment and taking a tight end top 10 overall. Yeah. They might have had some reluctance about taking another one, but Hockenson adds he's an extra offensive lineman and a great receiving threat in a sense. So we all know with Matt Patricia, very similar to Bill Belichick, he's going to want to establish the run and run the football. And that's exactly what TJ Hockenson could bring to the table. As far as a blocker, we've all seen the social media clips of him just ragdolling defensive linemen and linebackers in a sense. So I thought TJ Hockenson was a great pick for them. Green Bay Packers, I thought they drafted well. Rashawn Gary was a really good pick for them. And I know he was a very polarizing prospect, but him going into that situation with Mike Pettine's defense, I think it's a place where he could thrive. And also Darnell Savage, who I was a huge fan of, and I had never heard of him prior to the Senior Bowl. And he really caught my eye down at the Senior Bowl. And he was out there just commanding the defense and being a leader in a sense. So I wrote his name down after the Senior Bowl, and I went back and watched his film, and I'm really mad that I didn't know about him prior to the event. So it didn't surprise me at all that he ended up being a first-round selection. Also, I like the pick of Jay Sternberger. I think he's going to come in and make an immediate impact for them behind Jimmy Graham, providing another weapon for Aaron Rodgers. But with the Vikings, I thought starting off the draft really well with Garrett Bradbury. We know the offensive line really has been their Achilles heel over the past few years. So they're sliding Pat Elflein to that left guard spot and inserting Garrett Bradbury at that center position. And also Irv Smith Jr., who is another added weapon for Kirk Cousins. And we all have seen how he really needs a bunch of weapons on the perimeter in order to succeed, just because he's a quarterback that's really the sum of all of his parts. And he's not a guy really that can uplift bad talent around him. So putting so many weapons and then a security blanket in a sense and Bradbury in front of him, I thought was a really good start for the Vikings draft.
I couldn't remember his name, so that's why his name skipped my mind there. We appreciate the insight on on these NFC North teams, man, and I really think we're gonna have a phenomenal battle in the division this year. So Danny's got one more question for you to kind of bring it back to the college game before we let us know where everybody can find you and whatnot. And so Danny, go ahead with that question.
Yeah, so Jordan, what I've been doing is I'm going to ask every one of my guests here this year, who is their Heisman Trophy pick for this year? I'm curious to see who yours is.
I would say Tua Tagovailoa. Let me flip that. I'm sorry. I always forget about this guy because he's not draft eligible. I'm going to go with Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback from Clemson. This kid, he's special, man. And I haven't studied him in depth, but for him to go in against Alabama as a true freshman and to do what he did against a Nick Saban defense, to where they really were the underdogs, in my opinion, in a sense, just because we haven't seen a freshman do great against Saban's defense since Johnny Manziel a couple years ago. And Lawrence's performance on a big stage not being fazed at all, remaining so poised, not only to beat them, but to beat them the way that they did, 44-16 in the biggest game of the year. I think he's only going to get better from here on out, and he has two fantastic weapons on the perimeter and Justin Ross and T. Higgins, and then you have a speedster in the backfield of Travis Etienne, and then we'll see how well the defense does play this year, but we know, like Alabama, they have some other five-star guys that are really going to replace that talented defensive line and defense as a whole from last year. But I think Trevor Lawrence is definitely going to be the front runner for the Heisman Trophy.
Good pick. Good pick.
Yeah, I like the pick. I live about 40 minutes from Syracuse and have season SU tickets, so I will be at the Dome to see Trevor Lawrence live. So I'm excited about that. I had one more question in regards from Shane Marsa, smartest man in the barroom, in regards to Alex Bars and your thoughts on him, you know, coming out of Notre Dame.
I actually liked him a lot. The biggest thing with Bars was just health. He just was never able to stay healthy. And I think he only played 5 games his senior year, I believe it was. I don't want to go on record and saying what his injury was just because I don't really remember. But I know he did suffer an injury last year to where he wasn't able to play the entire year last year. But getting back with Harry Highstand was tremendous for him. And I think that was an underrated move for him. Just getting back with Highstand, his former position coach at Notre Dame. And he's going to be a really good depth piece. And he may never end up being a starter. But as far as a guy that can be that 6th or 7th man off the bench, I think he definitely could be that at any guard spot.
Awesome, man. We appreciate you. So, Jordan, before we let you go, man, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you, follow you, and anything you've got coming up on the website, either website. Feel free, man.
Yeah, so you can find me on climbingthepocket.com. You can also find my work on thedraftnetwork.com. Also, I have a podcast called The Draft Board, and I'm going to be rebranding that here soon. That's going to be an announcement that I'm going to make here soon. I got some special plans for that, and I have a special co-host that's going to be joining me from here on out. I don't want to reveal that right now, but I have some special plans for that. So those are the two places that you can find me, the 3 places, I should say, that you can find me. We're doing some really good things at The Draft Network. We have some special things planned for the 2020 draft cycle. Everybody has released their latest big boards, and also we're going to get some other things going here in the next few weeks. So I'm excited what we have going on there. Once again, that's thedraftnetwork.com and also climbingthepocket.com. You can also find me on Twitter at JReedNFL. That's at JReedNFL, and I am not the Washington Redskins type.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. That's awesome, man.
And I was going to say, like, you did a pretty good job for being concussed.
Right. 7-1 at that.
Hey, Jordan, man. The other podcast, too, on Twitter as well, at Draft Network LLC and at Climb_thepocket as well on Twitter. So give them a follow. Danny, go ahead.
Hey, Jordan, I just want to say, man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being our first guest on the inaugural Draft on Tap show. Hopefully, we'll have you on more down the line here as we get closer, you know, as we get into the college football season and get closer to the 2020 draft. So you got my number. Hey, let me know what you think of Sam Ellinger when you watch his tape.
I definitely will. And you guys don't know how much it means to be the first guest on here. I really appreciate you guys reaching out to me. Me and Aldo go way back to the NFC North barroom days. He was really one of the first guys to ever give me a chance in the industry. So shout out to you, Aldo. Thanks for everything you've ever done for me. And anytime you guys want me on, just let me know. I'll definitely, you know, definitely come back on the show.
Thanks, man. Truly appreciate it, man. Thank you. Really do. Thank you. Have a good night.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Wow. What a great first guest, you know, to kick this off, guys. I mean, you know, I like to think I know the game pretty well. And really, I've learned so much in this, you know, 35 minutes from both Danny and Jordan that this is going to be fantastic. I'm so excited for it. So, you know, we talked, you saw it on Twitter. Danny, I think we're ready to jump in to your top 10 quarterback prospects, unless you want to add anything on Jordan.
No, I just want to say, you know, just echo what you just said. You know, Jordan's awesome. Me and Aldo met him down at the Senior Bowl. You know, like he's mentioned, him and Aldo go way back, and I just met him for the first time back in January. And I mean, I can have conversations with him for hours, talking about prospects, talking about players. You know, so I was trying to be cognizant not to try to hog up too much of the time, but But yeah, I could talk to him for hours today.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's not looking at anything and just reeling, like, I mean, I do that for the Bears. I don't know that I could do that on that level. So very impressive. And let's jump right into your top 10 quarterbacks, Danny. So, you've talked about them already. Your number one on the board is Sam Ehlinger out of Texas. We talked a little bit today. I know how high you are on him. So let's hear a little bit about him, Danny.
Yeah, as I was talking with Jordan here, it was really close, to be honest with you, in terms of going into my preseason rankings here between Sam Ehlinger and Justin Herbert from Oregon. But the thing that won me over with Ehlinger and what put him over the top is I just love the way he plays the game. He plays with a moxie. He plays with a swagger that's not cocky but confident. If you know what I mean, he's got leadership. You can, that comes out on tape. You can see it. Some might say, well, how can you tell if he's a leader or not? Well, you see the way his blockers finish the blocks for him. You see the way his receivers stretch out and go the extra mile, if you will, to make a catch, to reel in the ball for him. He's a guy who has started basically from his freshman season. He's played in 23 career games, has made 20 starts. And besides the leadership, besides the moxie that he plays with, I mean, this kid is a dual threat. You know, he's only about 6'1 and 6'2. He's listed at 6'3, but I think he's more in the 6'1, 6'2 range. But he's got a solid build. He's got a stocky lower half. You see him running through arm tackles. You see him running over defenders at the goal line. For a guy that size, and you see what kind of football character he has, the type of heart, the charisma he plays with. And he's tough, man. This guy threw for 25 touchdowns last season. He rushed for another 16. So talk about a dual threat. This kid is my dark horse, really, to be my dark horse for the Heisman Trophy this season. So in terms of, you know, why I put him on top, again, if you compare him to Justin Herbert, Herbert's got the prototypical, and he's my number two, by the way. Herbert's got the prototypical size and speed. I mean, he looks like the type of NFL quarterback, you know, that GMs and scouts want. 6'5 and 235 pounds, has a rocket for an arm, is a pretty good, you know, athlete, has, you know, terrific straight line speed, can maneuver in a pocket. However, when you watch his tape, Herbert to me looks more like a robot back there doing his assignments. You know, and just, you know, he's told to look here, look here, look here, get rid of the ball, bam. And he's got the God-given ability and talent to be able to make those throws, make those passes. However, when you compare his tape to Ehlinger's tape, Ehlinger's out there making plays while Herbert's out there executing his plays. So that's why it was close. Again, you know me and the way I like my quarterbacks, big and tall, but man, you know, just watching Ehlinger play and comparing him to what I see with Herbert, I just think Sam Ehlinger is, to me, has a chance to be not only a dark horse for the Heisman, but also a chance to be a top five pick coming up next year's draft.
Yeah, and Danny, the latest Heisman odds, we'll thank Aldo for this, for the 2019 honors from Oddshark, has Ehlinger listed behind six other players, all quarterbacks, and he also has the second best odds to get the Heisman in the Big 12. And this is a little shocking to me, behind Oklahoma Sooners transfer quarterback Jalen Hurts. That kind of surprises me a little bit.
That does surprise me, but we'll get to Hurts later on my list, and I think I know why Hurts is high on that list, but we'll get to him later on.
So number two on your list, you just mentioned him a little bit, Justin Herbert out of Oregon.
Right. This is a kid, again, if he came out last year, and rumors were if he did come out last year, he could have been the top overall pick in the draft. Again, he's got the prototypical size, the arm strength, the athleticism, and everything these NFL teams want. However, you know, what I want to see him, Herbert, that is, improve on this year is his downfield accuracy. I want to see him improve in his mental processing. A lot of times you just see him do half field reads, meaning he cuts basically half of the field off from one hash mark to a sideline, and that's where he's looking at. So I want him to kind of progress in that area. When you watch his tape, you see downfield throws. You see his receivers having to stop and reach back for the ball, or receivers, you know, getting down low for the ball, cradling the ball, instead of hitting him in stride and getting him those yards after the catch, you know, they have to stop and make adjustments to the ball. That, to me, questions his downfield accuracy. So again, he's a kid that's gonna probably go in a top 10 in the draft, you know, assuming he stays injury free. But it's just, when it comes to being a leader, it comes to being, you know, accurate downfield, I just thought Ellinger, for me, took a top bill. So
number three on your list, Tua Tagovailoa. I remember watching the Gruden quarterback camp before. I can't remember if he had agreed to go to Alabama or not yet. And back then, he was winning these drills that, you know, he was stacked up against some pretty good competition, Danny. So he's your number three out of Alabama. I'm sure everybody knows where he's from, because the kid, I mean, just, he's a splash playmaker from the quarterback position. Your thoughts on Tua?
Yeah, Tua, obviously everyone knows him, obviously knows what type of season he had last year. I mean, I think if he won possibly every major award in college football, he was the Maxwell Award winner, the Sporting News National Player of the Year, a consensus All-American, first team All-SEC, so on and so forth. I mean, the kid threw for almost 4,000 yards, 43 touchdowns, and only 6 interceptions. He had an insane 199.4 quarterback rating last year. So you might ask, why is he number three on your list? Well, let's talk about his positives. The kid might be the best deep ball thrower in the draft. He's got terrific accuracy downfield. Now, talk about hitting receivers in stride. Tua does that on a consistent basis. And you see a lot of the splash plays, the big plays, is him connecting with the weapons he has on the outside at Alabama. And like I said, over the top downfield accuracy is off the charts. What I really question about him is his size. And I'm a big size guy. And that's why this Baker Mayfield experiment that's going on in Cleveland is going to be huge for quarterbacks like Tua, for quarterbacks like Sam Ellinger, for the quarterback coming up next on my list. If Mayfield can prove that, you know, guys, you know, sub 6'1", sub 6'2", can make it in today's NFL, you know, guys like Tua are going to have an easier time getting, getting drafted higher and higher. The other thing besides the height is durability. Now, he hasn't had major injuries, you know, like knees or anything like that, but it's either an ankle here, or it's a shin here, or a thigh muscle here. And although he hasn't missed many games, it kind of diminishes his ability to perform at his highest level on the football field on Saturday. So if he's getting hurt now, in the college game, what's going to happen when, you know, 300-pound men are falling on top of him in the NFL game? So durability for me is a question mark that I would like to see him improve on as well. And the other thing, really, if you look at his arm strength, yes, he might be the best deep ball passer in the draft, but his arm is not, you know, elite. A lot of his throws are slants, bubble screens. Like I said, you'll see those deep, but that's more accuracy. That's more getting more air underneath the ball and getting it downfield. But mm-hmm. in terms of getting it in tight spots, you know, Ellinger can do that. Herbert can do that. A lot of the other quarterbacks in this list here can do that. I just don't know if he can do that. You know, he doesn't have to do it. You know, a lot of the passing right. windows at Alabama are huge, and he's throwing to receivers that are wide open. Now, give credit to his receivers. They're creating that separation downfield, but you know, in terms of, I want to see that as well this year. So, you know, and just, but that all goes into my projection, all goes into my ratings. You know, as again, these are preseason ratings. So I know Tua was high on a lot of boards. I think mm-hmm. he was Jordan's number one quarterback on his board. So, you know, if any of these three guys go number one, I would not be shocked. So it's all kind of like, you know, picking, you know, a little bits and pieces here and there. But those are some of the things that I looked at Tua: the height, the durability, you know, concern, and the arm strength. And I just wanted to, and I wasn't sure. And I just need him to prove these to me, you know, throughout this next season.
His numbers, I mean, are outlandish. I mean, he threw for almost 4,000 yards, 43 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. I mean, the numbers just, I mean, they leap off the page when you look at him. You know, just an outstanding player. So moving on to your number four overall quarterback, Jake Fromm, from the University of Georgia.
Yep, and this guy is just an efficient, accurate thrower. What I love about this guy is you know, he's played in a pro style system, right? So he's taken snaps from under center. So, you know, he has those pro style concepts already. He's familiar with them. So, you know, he might be the most pro ready mentally coming into the draft next season. Again, accurate. He a nice touch on his ball. You know, we've seen recent Bears receivers and Javon Wims and Riley Ridley. When you watch those tapes, when you see them and you see how the ball is positioned perfectly for them, they rarely have to outstretch or, you know, start, you know, reach backwards or leap in into harm's way to get the ball. The ball, he throws the ball. He throws a receiver open. He throws it to a spot. A receiver runs to it, and he's just efficient and accurate. Now, the one question about him, again, is his size. He's about 6'1". He's not elusive in the pocket, right? Now, he's good at rolling out. He's good at getting out from between the tackle box and creating plays that way. However, he's not a guy that's going to really beat you with his legs. His arm strength is average at best, I'd say. So another guy that, you know, you would kind of question his, although his deep ball is accurate. But I just think that in his projecting him toward the NFL, I just want to see a stronger arm. Now, I'm going to throw out a name here, and I don't want everyone to think that I'm comparing him to this guy, but he reminds me a lot of Drew Brees, you know, in terms of accuracy, in terms of being pinpoint with his passes, in terms of being mobile enough, you know, to be able to find some time in the pocket, be able to roll out, be able to, you know, to throw the ball on the spot to a target and not have a great arm. So again, not comparing him to Drew Brees, but I see him with that type of game. And in terms of, you know, his range in the draft, as of right now, I see him late first, early second round material.
Okay.
With the possibility, obviously, you know, to move up in the first round. But again, going back to the whole, I called it the Baker Mayfield experiment. If that works out in Cleveland and he's a sub 6'1" quarterback, you know, these guys are going to get, you know, drafted, are going to there's gonna be more leeway for these guys to make an opportunity to, you know, to grab a starting position, to be starting caliber NFL quarterback. So what happens in Cleveland is gonna somewhat affect these guys coming up in next year's draft.
Moving on, looking at your number five pick or your number five quarterback overall, Jordan Love, and we touched on him earlier today when we talked, Danny, out of Utah State. I know how much you like him, and your thoughts on him.
Yeah, sorry, my mic was on mute there. Yeah, just like when I talked with Jordan earlier, you know, watching Dax Raymond tape last year, I noticed this kid throwing a ball to him. I'm like, holy cow, this guy can play. He's about 6'4", 215 pounds or so. He's athletic as heck. He can move out of the pocket. He can run. He's mobile. He could use his feet to create extra yards. He's kind of just like Ellinger. He's a dual threat quarterback. But what catches your eye is the arm strength, NFL type of, you know, arm talent. He's got that quick release. His ball placement is on spot. And for a kid who doesn't play in a Power Five conference, you know, plays for, you know, Utah State, when you see that, you're kind of like, wait, why is this kid not playing in a bigger name school? So, but yeah, definitely is a guy that I see has first round potential. A guy that I can see, you know, offensive coordinators falling in love with, you know, because of the mobility aspect, because of the arm strength, that the quick release, the ball placement downfield, you know, the RPO opportunities that he'll present for offenses that he gets drafted in. So, you know, he's from Utah State. There's a couple of games that Jordan highlighted, did a great job of highlighting in terms of for Love this season, that if he could go there and play well in those games, and LSU was one of them that Jordan said he was going to be at that game. If he does well there, look out, because the sky's the limit for this kid.
Is this one of those like a Carson Wentz, not to compare him to him, but small school, you know, you don't get to see a lot of his games on national TV. You know, is that similar, Danny, to a degree?
Wentz had some buzz growing the previous year. It wasn't top of the draft, first round, first pick overall, you know, buzz, but or second pick overall, I should say. But there was some buzz building, and similar to this kid, you know, there's buzz building about this kid. Now, will he go top overall? Will he go, you know, over guys like, you know, Herbert and Ehlinger and all these guys that we've talked about, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, you know, possibly, but he's got that skill set, guys. He's got that arm strength. He's got the mobility. And that's what, you know, quarterback coaches, you know, offense coordinators nowadays are looking for these quarterbacks that are mobile, that are athletic, that have accuracy, that have strong arms. You know, Mahomes, you know, and KC, Aldo's favorite quarterback. You know, he's a guy that, you know, can move the pocket. He's a guy can zip it in between defenders. He's a guy that could, you know, manipulate his arm angle and find the passing passing window. So, you know, guys like this, once they come around and NFL is a copycat league, you know, KC has this kind of quarterback. No, right. You know what? I want this kind of quarterback now. So, you know, stuff like this, the better he plays against better and bigger competition, the more teams are going to fall in love with him.
And we've got a quote here from Daniel Jeremiah on him. The scouting community started really buzzing about Love last fall. And he said he talked to a respected scout who had just left the school on a visit, and he told him that he liked Love more than Herbert.
I can see that. I mean, based off the tape, based off of the what he does on film, yeah, again, going back to Herbert, he's got the prototypical size, arm strength, athleticism that you want, but this kid does something else differently. This kid, downfield accuracy is on point. One of the negatives I just said about Herbert is his accuracy downfield. You constantly see his receivers having to stop their routes, having to reach back, having to adjust to the ball he's thrown. You know, this kid, you know, on the spot, you know, I call them bucket throws, those throws that fall in between the second and third level of the defense. This kid makes it, and he's got that lightning quick release. When you see that kind of stuff, when you see that arm tail, when you see the athleticism where you can add RPO options into it, that really gets, you know, the coaches excited and scouts. You know, I've heard the same buzz, or, you know, in terms of talking to some of the guys I know, like, you know, keep an eye on Jordan Love and that LSU game that Jordan just mentioned right now. That's going to be huge for Jordan Love.
Moving on to Shea Patterson out of Michigan, who, you know, last season, 2,600 yards, 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Your thoughts, Danny?
I really think Patterson, coming over from Ole Miss last year, his first year at Michigan, I really think he didn't show or didn't wasn't given an opportunity to show all of his potential, to show the entire toolkit that he has. So what I mean by that is Jim Harbaugh plays a old style West Coast, you know, grind it out, a tag where it's basically built around the rushing attack. And, you know, Patterson, when you put on this tape, he had a rough start versus Notre Dame. But when you go on during the season, you see when they allow him to get out beyond the tackle box, to do some RPOs. You know, there are few and far between those opportunities, but when he did, you saw him make the right read. You saw when he saw the defensive end crashing down, he kept the ball, he tucked it, and he went around the corner, and he's got very good athleticism. He's got terrific straight line speed. So this is a guy right now with a new change in offensive coordinator. They brought in Josh Gattis from Alabama, who's going to bring in a more up-tempo, a spread hybrid, you know, off in the system that's going to incorporate more RPOs. It's going to incorporate more of it's going to allow him, Patterson, that is, to utilize his strengths more. And I think you'll see this year, you know, Shea Patterson develop into a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah, I kind of wondered. I was wondering if you were going to touch on the Harbaugh topic there, because I kind of wondered if that kind of played a role into it. I watched a little bit of Michigan last year, and I kind of wondered if that played a role in it as well. Your number 7 overall, KJ Costello out of Stanford.
Yeah, with Costello, at this point right now, I'm just looking for quarterbacks with traits, right? Things that NFL scouts, NFL teams are going to want. And with Costello, the first thing that pops out at you is his size. He's a big, tall quarterback, 6'4", 220 pounds. He has got solid pocket presence. You know, he's a good job of feeling the pressure. Does a good job of, you know, stepping up in the pocket. I call it climbing the ladder to elude that outside pressure. He's got a strong arm. He's played under center. He's played in a pro style system. You know, these Stanford kids, you know, they come to the NFL well prepared. So he's a guy that, you know, when you look at those positives, that's something that I think scouts are going to fall in love with, and scouts are going to say, all right, you know, we'll give this kid a chance. Now, you know, on the flip side, you know, this kid is not mobile, right? He's gonna struggle eluding and running away from NFL defenders. That's for sure. I mean, I don't want to call him a statue in the pocket, but he's pretty slow. And he's got a kind of a slow winding kind of arm release or release and is on his throw. So if he's going to be able to beat NFL corners, and he's going to have to kind of speed that up as well. So, but you look at the traits right now. You look at a guy who's 6'4", 220, plays in a pro style system. Like I said, played under center, understands pro concepts, and he's a guy that's going to get drafted.
This next player at your number eight spot, Jake Bentley out of South Carolina, he threw for 3,171 yards last year. His touchdown interception ratio 27-14. Your thoughts on him, Danny?
Another kid here that's got the size that, looking at traits again here, I got a size guy. It's 6'3", 218 plus pounds, a pocket passer, right? This is a guy that's also not athletic. He's going to be a guy that's going to be stationed in the pocket, and he's not going to threaten you with his feet. However, what I like about him is he's got this compact, tight delivery, and he gets rid of the ball real quickly. And pre-snap, he does a terrific job of identifying blitzes. So he reads the defensive coverages. He finds his release valve quickly, after he's given the ball. He finds mismatches nicely. And I love quarterbacks that are able to manipulate safeties with their eyes. And he does a good job of dropping back and being able to, misguide or mislead the safety to one side of the field. And then lo and behold, the ball is going in the opposite direction. So stuff like that, when you catch on tape, and the fact that he plays in a Power 5 conference, possibly the best conference in college football in the SEC, is only a cherry on top.
Yeah, and he threw for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns versus Clemson. So
that's a game that I was watching and there are some throws there that he had he had pinpoint placement on his passes downfield that were impressive.
The next on your board, Danny, at number 9 overall is Nate Stanley from Iowa, 2,852 yards last year, 26 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. Yeah, I don't know if it's because I had a relative graduate from Iowa, but I always loved the quarterbacks there, and for some reason I really like Nate Stanley.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm not a big Iowa quarterback fan. But what I like about Stanley is again, we're looking at traits here, right? We're talking about size, talking about arm strength. Yep. He's got all that. And plus, this guy's got the intangibles. He's a 3-year starter. All right, he's a permanent team captain. Rarely do you see guys being voted permanent team captains, especially this kid's going into his senior year now. So he's been a captain for the last couple of seasons. 2-time academic All Big Ten. So that guy's smart. He'll get into his playbook. He'll memorize it. He'll know the plays. He's a guy that's going to be reliable. Whether he's a starter material down the road in the NFL, who knows? I mean, if he gets with a quarterback whisperer, he gets with an offensive mind that can tap into some more of his potential. Like I said, he's got the size. He's got the arm strength. He's got the smarts. So, stuff like that will usually get you drafted in the NFL.
And then last but not least, And I think we touched on this a little earlier, Danny, when we were talking, Jalen Hurts out of Oklahoma, number 10 on your list. I made the comment to you that I don't think he's a thrower. he's a running quarterback, and you echoed the same statement. But he's at number 10 on your list. Your thoughts on Jalen?
This really is a testament to his head coach, Lincoln Riley. If Lincoln Riley can make Baker Mayfield – a 2-time walk-on, Kyler Murray, a 5'10 quarterback, into Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks, first overall pick in the draft, I want to see what he does with Jalen Hurts. Now, again, Jalen Hurts at Alabama at times looked like he didn't know how to throw football. But this kid is a smart kid. He's a coach's son. He's a kid who was highly recruited. Okay, so obviously he's got the athleticism. He's got the skill set to play. So I want to see what Lincoln Riley can do with him. And that's why I put him in my top 10, because I have a feeling that the Jalen Hurts we see at Oklahoma will not resemble the Jalen Hurts we saw at Alabama. So that's why I'm really curious to see how this kid develops. And I'll tell you what, if Lincoln Riley makes Jalen Hurts the first overall pick in this draft, Lincoln Riley can pick any team and can ask for whatever he wants, because he's going to be something in the NFL next year, whether it's a head coach or something. But I mean, if he can turn this kid into an NFL draftable prospect, then he can turn anybody into a NFL quarterback. So I'm really, really intrigued by the experiment that's going to happen here at Oklahoma this season with Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, it would be pretty amazing to see him you know, just in what I've seen, you know, obviously being at Alabama and seeing him play probably even more than my hometown Orange, you know, prior to last season, I like you, Danny, I would be shocked if he became an NFL quarterback. I would be just, I would be shocked.
But the, what is it? The, Hook Me headlines are have him as a better odds to win the Heisman over my guy Sam Ehlinger.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So someone else out there thinks that Lincoln Riley might have some sort of magic pixie dust in his bag there that he's making these guys turn to NFL quarterbacks. So we'll see what happens. That's why I put him on the list, because he's a guy that's got some talent, you know, athletically. He's got the arm. I just I don't know what happened in Alabama. I'm not sure, but if anybody can fix him, I think Lincoln Riley can.
Yeah, and it's kind of shocking that, he goes to Alabama. I mean, if you're a high school football player, that's where you want to go. So for him to not, you know, pan out, I mean, obviously Tua played a huge role in that coming in when he did. Just to take over the game and then the job from Jalen, kind of shocking.
Right. And the other thing I keep in mind is there are other outside factors, right? You know, they've had, you know, a big turnover in their offensive coordinators the last couple of years at Alabama. You know, did that play a role in it? Did anything happen in terms of, with Tua coming in, with, you know, something happened? I mean, they seem like they got along, so we don't know. You know, that all looked like it was okay there. But, you know, I'm just trying to say that there could be other factors that led to a kid not performing up to standards. At times it seemed like Alabama didn't trust him to throw the ball. And now, you know, obviously, you know, if he couldn't throw the ball, he wouldn't be playing at Alabama. So he's got to have some, you know, some talent. So I just, the fact that they didn't seem like they trusted him to throw the ball really kind of, you know, leads me to believe that there's could have been something else going on that we're not privy to. And, you know, a new start, a transfer to this coach, to this staff, to this system might just be what Jalen Hurts needs to re-energize his career and possibly his NFL draft prospects.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Danny. And I mean, what a great job you did this week, you know, breaking down your top 10 quarterbacks. And, phenomenal. I mean, this first show was a great, great way to start the season. We want to thank Jordan Reed once again for coming on with us and just knocking it out of the park for our first guest on Draft on Tap this year. And Danny, thank you to you, for inviting me along on this journey from now until the draft, in 2020, man. I'm excited to be with you, and I'm expecting to learn a ton from you and anybody else that comes on this show, man. And I'm excited to be here with you, bud.
Yeah, it was a great first show. Again, Jordan knocked out of the park, and then thank you, Ryan, for doing what you did and steering the ship. You're all those protege right here, and all those done a good job of training you. A great job, great first show, and what we'll do is every week we're going to continue, you know, talking about, you know, the topics of college football, what's happening, and, like, you know, for example, the injuries at Alabama, the suspensions, and we're also going to continue to preview some of these prospects coming up in the 2020 draft, because lo and behold, before you know it, it's April and the Bears are, you know, going to be drafting. They have two picks in the second round this year, so definitely, you know, stay tuned every week. We're going to try and get you as much info on all these players as you can. My goal, Ryan, is to have our listeners, when whoever the Bears pick, whatever pick they get, I want them to say, all right, I heard Danny talk about this guy. I know what this guy can do. I know what he can't do. So I don't want them to be like, who is this guy? So that definitely is my goal, is to keep the audience informed of all these players that are potentially going to be Bears after next season's draft.
It's going to be a lot of fun, man. And we want to thank everyone who listened live in our Mixler chat and interacted with us throughout the show. And remind you that you can find Draft on Tap and all of our other great shows from Bears Barroom Radio Network on all of your favorite podcast streams and apps as well, including iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, and many others. My name is Ryan Badgley, and we want to thank Aldo for engineering for us tonight. And a big thank you to Danny, and thank everybody for listening, and we hope to have you back with us next week right here on Draft on Tap.